Welcome to the Scaling Through Structure podcast. I'm your host, Austin LaRoche, and we are here to learn about the winning systems that business leaders use to find success. If you believe in the power of organization, frameworks, and scalable processes, then this is the pod for you. Let's go. Okay, I am here with Mitchell Levy of Credibility Nation today. I'm very, very excited. Thanks for being here, Mitchell.
Austin, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
All right, let's start with Credibility Nation. Tell us what it is and how it went from this great idea you once had to where it's flourishing today.
These are so many assumptions. So we'll do a little bit. So first, I will do a quick summary of Mitchell. Right, I'm in Silicon Valley. Been here 35 years. Been happily married for 34. Actually, I think that means I've been in Silicon Valley for 36 years. Huh, I should update that in my brain. I've started 20-ish companies. I've sat on the board of a NASDAQ firm, and I like putting processes in place. So this is how I was able to, as a publishing company, we've published over 750 books. I've written 65 myself because I have processes, right? About 4 years ago, I started thinking about the fact that book publishing has been and continues to be democratized. By the way, we'll put a stake in the ground. In 2023, thought leadership was democratized, but we'll put that aside. Okay. So as book publishing is being democratized, what's next for Mitchell? And so I went on a Napoleon Hill journey. I interviewed 500 thought leaders on credibility. Out of that, so to answer your question, what is Credibility Nation? Credibility Nation is the outcome of interviewing 500 thought leaders, having a framework of what credibility is, produced a book, a podcast, and the membership community called Credibility Nation. But now I'm going to step back and say, what makes a community flourish? And I'm going to say we have 450 members. We are not flourishing because credibility is, to me, something that we all need and everyone already thinks they have. That's the downside, right? The downside is if you talk to people, you're a systems guy, you talk to people and say, hey, do you have accountability? They're all going to say yes, but then they don't show up to the meetings or deliver their projects on time. Okay, well, that's not accountability. If you ask if they have integrity, they'll go, yes, but they'll have integrity on most things except maybe one or two, right? If you ask if you have that credibility, they say yes. So for me, about 8 months ago, after deploying credibility for 3.5 years, what I recognize is what most people don't have, 98%, and what many people can't actually say they have because it shows up right away is clarity. And so I've now focused on, it's still credibility, but credibility comes as part one is clarity, part two is credibility. So to answer your question, I'm at the start of rebuilding everything I'm doing, start meaning about 8 months into it, of rebuilding everything I'm doing, focused on the most important thing we can have as humans, as business people, is to love what we do, to be able to articulate what we do in seconds, in essence, to make it a playground we play in. So it's very easy to invite other people in to play with us.
There's so much I want to dive into there.
I didn't make that easy, did I?
Let's start with the 65 books. You said that everything is processed. Give me your process for writing a book.
So I have four different book publishing companies. Each company has its own framework. So the first thing, when I just did the company called Happy About, Happy About meant that books could be 25,000 words or less. And lots of people, versus the old traditional books were 40, 50, 60,000 words. We've had Happy About books being 15,000 words. It still takes a lot of time to write and deliver. And I go, well, what's next? Well, what came next was a book series called 42 Rules. 42 Rules is comprised of 42 500-word blog posts. So if you've been blogging, now technically it's not really blog post, it's 500 word articles, but if you've been blogging for a year and you blog once a week, you have a 42 rules book. So now it's combining them all together. I did another series called the Think Aha series. Think Aha was when Twitter was still called Twitter, not X. And it was comprised of 140 bite-sized quotes. So if you've been tweeting and you've got 140 of them, now what happens is a human, we can't just process 140 distinct pieces of information. So what would happen is you would have I called them sections instead of chapters. You'd have sections of your book, and then you'd have aha messages or tweets inside those sections. And then you'd either have a summary or a conclusion for each section. So those are three different models of frameworks of book creation that would be straightforward. And now what happens is a number of the books came from interviews. So for instance, I have a book on legacy with some of the top experts in the world who are focusing in that area, and also just more traditional business people, where I did a podcast, very similar to this. And we focused specifically on the topic called legacy. And if you speak to somebody for a half hour on a very focused topic, you can put it as output words, or really cool, you bring it out as aha messages. And now I have a book on legacy with eight other people who are talking about what are the characteristics of what legacy really means for you. Does that make sense? Did I answer your question on how to make that happen?
Oh, you absolutely did. I once had a mentor who said, if you can write a word, you can write a sentence. If you can write a sentence, you can write a paragraph. You can write a paragraph. You can write a chapter. If you can write a chapter, you can write a book. And I thought that was the simplest it was ever going to get. But I think you've built frameworks that make it even easier. That sounds incredible. I love that, how you were able to bring that out. And I think it speaks to this love of processes that you told us about. So where does this love of processes and systems come from?
Ooh, it might have been, so it's possible it was my entire life. However, I could bring it back to college. So my undergraduate degree, so I'm one of those really weird people who are using what they learned in their undergraduate degree in their life.
Wow. Wow.
Right. So let me share the what I learned. It was the University of Miami, and the course was stochastic and deterministic models of operational research. So that's the degree. I have a BS in that. So yeah, a bachelor of science in determinist and stochastic and deterministic models of operational research. So let me summarize that. I was taught how to model people and systems and make it easier, right? Okay. And what I realized when I did the 500 interviews, I didn't have to research anything. And this was decades after going to university. I didn't have to do research. What I ended up doing is, instead of architecting everything I need to analyze, I told my team, hey, let's do the first 10. We'll sit back and then we'll figure out what the scoreboard is and what are the KPIs we're measuring. And then it became easy. Let me give you my absolute favorite process that I have. And I'm sure you use this given who you are, I'm sure you use this in some way. And if you're listening to this and you're not driving, I'm going to suggest taking out a pen and a paper. I mean, just physically take out a paper and a pen and draw in the piece of paper a box. And you could label that the black box. And then what you want to do is have a line going into the black box and a line coming out of the black box. So on the left-hand side, you have a line coming in, call that input. And on the right-hand side, have a line going out called output. So I affectionately call this the input-output diagram, and anyone who does processes or systems know about the input-output diagram. And what I will tell you is, every conversation you get in with anybody, most of the time when you present a problem or an issue or an opportunity, the first thing the person you're with is going to do is jump inside the black box. So prior to describing the inputs and the outputs, they jump in the black box. So I'll give you an example. And then we'll come back to the input output. As a publisher, people would send me their manuscript and say, Mitchell, what do you think? So first of all, the publishers just don't randomly read manuscripts. And my first question is, well, who are you today? And I could look at their, assuming they have good social media, I could look at how they show up today. And then what do you want as an output? Because the book means absolutely nothing. It depends on what the person wants. And if they say something that doesn't make sense, like, oh, I want it to sell more copies than the Bible, well, then it realizes that it's probably not somebody I'm going to work with because they're unrealistic on their expectations, right? Mm-hmm. So what's interesting is, same thing, podcast. You know, I deconstructed how you created the podcast and I figured out the methodology of who you use to create the podcast. What we didn't do in the green room is what is your expectations from the podcast, right? What's your output, right? So from a process perspective, what I've been able to do with my team, because by the way, I also occasionally jump into the black box. So it took probably 2 quarters of pounding into the team, the inputs and outputs. Like we would jump into stuff and somebody would just jump into a one-on-one and they would ask me a black box question. And I go, hey, could you tell me the inputs and outputs? And the first time that that was given back to me, I just had a laugh. It just like, oh, yep, there I was. I do what we all do. So from a process perspective, my favorite process is to be able to understand when you talk to somebody who they are today and where they want to go, the input and the output. The rest mm-hmm. of the conversation comes simple.
Wow. I really like that. And I mean, it's so clear that you spent so much time in this systems process world. I always joke that I kind of stumbled into it just because all of a sudden I realized through my natural senses to roam around the world and think. And then, you know, maybe when I'm feeling right, that's when I can do. That's when I can, that wasn't pushing the needle. And the more structure that I got, the more that I was able to take on, you know, a more process-driven life, the more I thrived. And so it's become this thing that I don't know that I naturally have the ability to create a I could never major in building processes. Like that's not what I could do. I love to architect things, but it's all because, you know, naturally, if I don't do this, I'm out wandering. I'm living life freely and the mortgage isn't getting paid and we're in trouble. So I feel like my life is indebted to people like you who are able to be the process leaders, I should say, and have helped me be able to adopt things along the way.
By the way, I wouldn't belittle yourself so much. I would say, if you're somebody who could view the world and based on what you see, come up with a process that will optimize, you went to the school of hard knocks. a lot of people don't analyze their world and figure out how to optimize it. That is the right approach. Because no matter what you learned in school, it's all textbook until you get to real life.
Yeah. And that's really interesting. So, like one of the things for me where I use most of my processes, or not most of them, I suppose it's 50-50, but is in my personal life. So where do process and systems fit into the personal side of the Mitchell Levy experience?
Oh, it's all the same, right? I think when I was growing up, and most people still in today's world, they have a face that they wear that is their friend face, and it's a different face than their family face, which is a different face than their work face. And that's too much work for me, right? It's to me, it's the same guy. It's the same person for good or for bad. So the spouses out there, you could get mad at me. during the workday, if my wife wants to make time with me, I mean, she could go into the office, but I'm mostly back to back all day. She'll actually book time on my calendar. Right. And, you know, does that sound really bad? If it sounds bad to you, sorry. But it works because when she's booked time on my calendar, there she is. Instead of this, I'm going to, for those who are listening, I'm going to turn around and there she is right behind me. Right. And I will stop what I'm doing and I'll focus on her because she has time on the calendar. And so, you know, prior to us doing that, she would try to come in during different times and I might have other things planned. Right. So she has time on my calendar. She's figured out how to break into my process so she can get my attention for something that we need to do. And so it's not that it's that we don't do stuff random. I mean, sometimes you have to plan the fun stuff, right? You have to plan the, okay, the calendar on Sunday completely blocked, no meetings from other people. Let's make sure we do something fun, right? Now we don't have to do any more structure than that. But that is sort of how it goes right now. If you're a client of mine, you have a client calendar and the client calendar has every half hour free. Now here's what's really interesting. You know, a lot of my team is in either India, Pakistan, Philippines. So my one-on-ones are typically my 10 o'clock at night, right? So 9, 10 at night. So 9, 10 at night in Pacific is 1 in the morning in Eastern. Sometimes with my European folks, I'll have a meeting at 10:30 or 11 my time, which will be, you know, 6:30-ish their time the following day, right? Australia, same sort of thing. So what happens is there are people on the East Coast who end up booking time on my calendar and it shows up on my calendar at 10 p.m., which is 1 a.m. Eastern. And they can't possibly imagine, like they think it's 1 a.m. And even though it says 1 a.m., they don't see the a.m., right? And then I'll send it, if I notice, and I notice most of the time, but not always, because when somebody books and I don't remember them, I'll look at their LinkedIn profile and see where they're from. And I'll go 10 p.m. Huh, that's a problem. They probably think unless they're doing something at 1 in the morning, they're so anyhow, process-wise, I'm very calendar-driven. So that's really part of my life, big process. I'm very structured on what I do when process. When people talk to me, particularly my team, if they give me the assignment, I'll end with this because this is very the way my brain works. If you want me to record a video, you just need to give me the inputs and the outputs. You don't need to tell me the black box. So you can say, hey, Mitchell, I need 30 seconds or I need 10 minutes. Here's the topic. Here's the audience. And I turn on and I go because the black box just happens automatically because I'm already thinking about the inputs and the outputs. And so that, from a process perspective, that's how I work.
That's great. I appreciate what you said about taking time with the spouse and getting it on the calendar. I actually have a 10 a.m. every Friday, 1 hour, like, you know, family meeting. This is what we have to do. And I had to fight for that for a few years.
Cool, by the way.
Awesome. Yeah. But it was like, whoa, this doesn't need to be like a business thing. We don't need to be on the calendar. You know, I don't want to be like another one of your clients. And so there is part of that, like professional and personal, that at some point you go, no, I know what you need for me and for me to give it. I just have to have that time booked. Right. And so it is those little things in our personal lives. Another one that I always talk about was I felt like wasn't calling home enough. Right. My parents would call and I'm on the West Coast too. And they're on the East Coast. And so, you know, I'm in the LA area. So back before COVID, when we all went to an office, when's the best time to call somebody, you know, when you're sitting in traffic, right? Well, on the way to work, that was the middle of their day and they had things going on and they were in bed sometimes when I was on the way home. So I just had to carve out a time and boom, now, you know, that's Mondays at 4 p.m. my time. We always chat. So it is that personal, professional, and creating those systems is always a lot of fun. So I want to ask about a little bit more about Credibility Nation. You know, this is your current baby. It sounds like you've had a lot of babies, but this is the one that you're really passionate about. Talk to me about why you're so passionate about credibility.
I'll give you one of the outputs for those that are interested. I've got a TEDx. It's called "We Are Losing Our Humanity, and I'm Tired of Watching It Happen." And so why am I passionate about credibility and now clarity? Or actually, they came at the same time, but I'm passionate because we can be so much more humane to each other if we did nothing more than follow the rules of being credible. And credibility, there are 10 values that I pulled out when I did the research. Now, by itself, what happened when I was pushing and sharing credibility is people say, what's the ROI? And to me, when I think about the ROI of credibility, what's the ROI of being humane? What's the ROI of drinking clean water or breathing fresh air, right? So I needed to grab an ROI, which is where clarity comes in, right? So to me, and this is about as simple as I could possibly make it, if you as a human are somewhere in your career, the beginning, the end, the middle, and you feel like there's something missing, the answer is there's probably something missing because you followed somebody else's playbook. You live by somebody else's rules. You were not you. You did not serve the way you wanted to serve. So for me, I'm passionate about this because I've now done this over 1,000 times where I've had over 1,000 individuals and companies be able to articulate who they are in less than 10 words. So that level of brevity, that level of clarity is so amazingly powerful. And if you can articulate in 10 words or less who you are have the ability to live and interact in that playground where people know when they're interacting with you, who you are and how you show up in the world. And you can go through your entire life if you're living in a playground where, so for me, if you're a credible human, you are of service to others. And I'll give, this is the formula, by the way, for how to articulate yourself in less than 10 words. If you're a credible human or you're a credible company, you are of service to others. So first question, who? So who do you serve? Your case, B2B companies, right? You could be more clear. I mean, you could be more narrow, but B2B companies, right? And then the next thing is, what is their pain point? Well, what is their pleasure point that they experience? And when you've been able to do that, the transformation that can happen in somebody's life when they're playing in their playground is profound. So, you know, I spent $50,000. I interviewed 500 thought leaders on credibility. I unlocked a couple secrets, and now I want to share them because it is so amazingly simple. It is absolutely not easy. What's not easy, and Austin, this is the cool part. So let's assume that I have helped over 1,000 people get their, I call it a CPOP, by the way, their customer point of possibilities. I've helped over 1,000 people get that. And let's assume when we're having that conversation, they're feeling, oh my God, this really is it. This is who I am. And let's assume that that is who they really are. Those are three assumptions. By the way, I have done this 1,000 times. I've had to have a person go, oh my God, that's amazing. The assumption is this is really them, okay? 90% of the time, that person, that company will forget it in the next 2 hours to 2 weeks. They're going to forget it because when they talk to their friends and their peers and their advisors, they're going to say, wait, I don't like that word, change this. So I don't like that word, or yeah, that's, you're bigger than just that. You know, like we've been trained enough that people are coming in and they're saying, yeah, that's not real. You should focus on something different. And so I'm passionate about this to continue to find ways in which people can really help themselves, that companies could really be so, if a company had a CPOP that was really what the executive management believed in, it is so much easier to empower the employees and for the employees to be engaged. Hey, this is the playground we play in. Do you want to play here? Yes or no? If you don't want to play, go away. If you want to play, then you're empowered to do this versus what most companies do is they give their employees handcuffs. Hey, this is the playground you play in, but you can only play this way, right? And so I'm passionate because it is a very simple secret that we have had so many people try to make life and everything so much more complicated. This is really simple and very powerful.
It sounds like it also speaks to the gap of the creation versus the adoption, right? Because there's all these things out there where we can create a process, we can, you know, create a new way of doing things in our CRM or technology. But at the end of the day, for any of it to work, you know, that we create this because we believe in it, we've got to get people to be hands-on and actually do it. So how do you not, you know, because to your point, you said that 90% of people create these things and then don't know where to go next. How do you bridge that gap? How do you bridge that gap of we're creating this and then we're actually going to follow through and live it?
By the way, that is exactly the place I'm deploying now, right? So it's one thing to in Douglas Adams' case, The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, it's one thing to know the answer to life, universe, and everything. It's 42, by the way. So it's one thing to know that. It's another for other people to grab it, understand it, and to be able to deploy it. And so what needs to happen is you need to have all the right, you need to be able to deliver to the audience, whoever your audience is, something that is so amazingly simple and powerful that they can, and by the way, in the world there are people, let's make it very simple. There are three types of people: the do-it-yourselfers, the done with you, and the done for you, right? And so the types of tools and solutions you need to put in place for any process need to address each one of those types of people, right? So at the moment, 8 months ago, I realized clarity needed to be where I focused versus credibility. So as I created a clarity certification program, and when I was looking at the audience I need to serve, I needed to pick a very focused vertical that was in such desperate pain that it was very easy to demonstrate ROI. And that was something I was not doing in the credibility side. So I wanted to show an ROI. And then what happens is I need to put the processes in place, the solutions, the approaches that address the do-it-yourselfers, the done for you, and the done with you, right? And I made a decision that I want to primarily do the done with you. Mm-hmm. That the do-it-yourselfers, I'll just put the content out there and they could self-serve. The done with you will go through together in mastermind processes where they get to then continue to execute what they do. And the done for you isn't the audience I want to serve at the moment. So I look for partners who can do it for me or to do it for themselves, right? And the audience that I picked was coaches. Because if you look at ICF, the International Coaching Federation, they're the granddaddy of all the certification of coaches in the world. They did an annual study. They do annual studies of salaries of coaches and executive coaches. And in the U.S. alone, they've done a worldwide study, but U.S. alone, there are over 100,000 executive coaches where their average salary is $50,000. So crazy, right? And so what happens is it is very easy at that price point to show an ROI. Because executive coaches, what's interesting to me is they've been taught how to do transformation. They've been taught and certified on how to bring a company or an individual from A to B. What they've not been taught is how to do business development, how to put processes in place that allow a good steady stream of people to come in the door that they could talk to that steady stream, turn some people into referral partners, turn others into prospects, leads, prospects, clients, right? And so that's the program I created. So for me, my CPOP at the moment, coaches who've created a job, not a business. And so my job is to support that group, put processes and systems in place, and then move to the next vertical.
Wow, that's really, really cool. Well, it sounds to me like you've now got the clarity that you need for this next iteration of Credibility Nation. It's really, really been great talking with you today. Thanks so much for coming on the show.
Austin, really fun and pleasurable to spend time with you. For those, if you're curious, just you can go to mitchelllevy.com and you can throw that in the show notes. There are lots of other things going on, but you can see all that from my primary website. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. We definitely want them going to mitchelllevy.com. We want them going to credibilitynation.com as well.
You know, I'm going to say what depends. If you're a coach, consult, if you see this in the next month, whenever this shows up, if you're a coach or consultant or a business where there's primarily one or two rainmakers, there's a summit I'm doing. It's a free summit called Coaching Fest. We expect 5,000 to 10,000 people. So it's coachingfest.com. So that would be, I mean, I love people going to Credibility Nation, but I'm going to say go to either mitchelllevy.com or on LinkedIn, or go to coachingfest.com. And we basically giving away, and I've interviewed 14 of some of the top coaching professionals on the planet. And that is one of three summits that I'm doing focused on putting the tools and the infrastructure in place to coaches so that they really can end up loving what they do, as opposed to the job thing, which the assumption is they don't love it at all.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Mitchell. I really, really appreciate it. And I cannot wait to have this episode come out and have everybody hear you and learn more about all the different processes that you've been able to create. Thanks again.
Austin, thanks. Take care. Appreciate you.
Thanks so much for listening to the Scaling Through Structure podcast. This pod was produced by Sabrina. If you liked what you heard, do us a favor and subscribe or leave a 5-star review on the platform of your choice. If you want to be a guest and share with the world your winning system, head over to podcast.atakinteractive.com/guest and fill out your information accordingly. To connect, send me an invite at www.linkedin.com/in/AustinLaRoche. That's AustinLaRoche. We appreciate each and every one of our listeners, but especially you. Until next time, I'm Austin LaRoche, and we will see you soon.